Welcome back to the Gadget Show podcast for part two of our famous tech rivalries. Because let's be honest, we've barely scratched the surface.
Exactly. We've already tackled some of the biggest gadget showdowns in history, but there are still plenty of tech feuds to come. So from console wars to smartphone battles, we're getting stuck into the rivalries that have shaped our tech world.
So come on, whose side are you on as we pitch the biggest brands and gadgets against each other? Trust us, the big boss battle at the end of Karate Kid has nothing on this week's episode.
Here's a big one then. iPhone versus Android. The smartphone showdown.
That's fighting talk.
I know, absolutely. So let's go back in time. It's 2007. Steve Jobs takes the stage and unveils the iPhone, a revolutionary product that changes everything. So 1 year later, Google and its partners fire back with Android, an open source alternative, promising more choice and innovation. And then what follows is the greatest tech rivalry of the 21st century, pitting Apple's walled garden against Android's open playground. But in the battle of iPhone versus Android, who is really winning?
God, you're good, though. The way you pull it all together, Suze, I love it. You're right. Walled garden is a great way of explaining the experience that we all have with Apple's products. And it means that we have a seamless integration between iPads and MacBooks and certain apps and obviously iPhones. But it also means, for example, that when I shoot video on my super duper new iPhone, I know I'm going to face challenges if I want to edit it on something other than my iPhone or a MacBook and whatever piece of editing software they're pushing. So if I want to shoot it on Premiere, for example, so edit it on Premiere on a PC, well, I can tell you, I'm so far, not with the new one, but with my previous iPhone, I face challenges in terms of how overexposed it is or whatever. And other apps sometimes just won't even take a .mov file or the other way around, an MPEG-4. So it is interesting. That's the disadvantage of the walled garden. That interoperability is not there. Whereas that's not the case with Android, is it? Android is what it says on the tin. It's open. And you can just plug whatever you want into the bottom of the phone. And if it's a drive, you can move files. You could argue that you can do that with the iPhone, but it depends. It depends what iPhone you've got and what device you're putting in. So, interesting. I'm fascinated to hear the numbers. I'm guessing you've done the maths.
Yeah, no, I have. I think, you know, it's sort of like you're cleverly an Apple jailmate or you're on the outside. You know, you're kind of locked in or you're on the outside with the walled garden effect. Right, I've got some figures for you. These are from last year, 2024. So total smartphones sold.
Yeah.
iPhone, over 2.6 billion units. Android phones, and I've combined all of the brands together, over 3.5 billion active users. So over a billion more. Global market share. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Android, 70%. iPhone, iOS, 28%. Right, in terms of the most popular brands from last year, I'm going to take the number one and number two, okay? So Apple, number one, with 232 million iPhones sold annually, just ahead of Samsung, who's the Android leader, on 223. So it's much of a muchness, really.
Very close, yeah.
Very close, yeah.
But then you've got the other brands, haven't you?
You've got the other brands. The you've got, you know, Xiaomi, Oppo, Vivo, Google Pixel, other brands like that. In terms of cost, the most expensive phone, so you'll know this, the iPhone 16 Pro Max, £1,199.
That's where it starts at. Yeah. It starts at that price. It gets a lot more if you want a larger memory.
As opposed to the Samsung Galaxy Z Fold, which is £1,749.
Wow. That's a lot of money. You're not so keen now, are you, for your pocket-sized iPhone?
Right, Apple Store versus Play Store. So the Apple App Store revenue in 2023 was 87 billion.
Oh my God.
As opposed, this is what's interesting, to Google Play Store revenue, the same year, 46 billion.
Now, there are other, obviously, app stores available for different types of phone, aren't there?
Yeah.
But
bigger than the biggest, really.
Yes, but in terms of sort of like for like. So we can't conclude that Android phones maybe don't sell more or as much software in the shape of apps as Apple. But it would seem from that Google Play Store versus Apple App Store that Apple are in the lead. Wow. Susie, can I jump in?
Yeah, go ahead.
So you'll know that we were big advocates of Apple on the Gadget Show. We didn't, you know, because we were left to be honest on that show. We were allowed to be honest, but what we had to do was make sure that about our personal preferences, but that our editorial reflected a balanced, viewpoint. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a fair assumption to say that the kind of Apple, we were there in the heyday of Apple, weren't we, when it was really making a name for itself and establishing a kind of a luxury brand of products that were affordable.
Yeah, and creating the biggest changes in the industry.
Absolutely. And we rode that wave. But then, I don't know about you guys, but I say that because I mean John and Otis and, you know, the rest of the team. I actually turned a corner and I went full Android. And I was Android till I die for about, well, not till I die, for about 6 years. And was particularly into Samsungs, but had Huawei, which I really enjoyed actually until, yeah. You know.
Did you ever have a HTC? Because we used to test a lot of those on the
yeah,
show.
Yeah, I had an HTC at one time and loads of different phones. Google, I had a Google phone. And I loved the openness of it. I loved the fact that I knew I could film anything, photograph anything, and I could then just plug it into a drive or I could plug it into my laptop or some form of tablet, and I could just move everything I wanted around, and it was easy. And that is, well, it certainly, historically speaking, hasn't been the case with my Apple phones, which I'm now back into. This is the second Apple phone I've had since that long period of Android, and I'm really enjoying it. I'm enjoying the experience, despite the fact that the aforementioned Apple Intelligence is underperforming at the moment. And so,
what's your story? A little bit is, yeah. Well, I've lived in the walled garden for a long time, let's put
right.
it like that.
Yeah,
yeah. I've inhabited that walled garden.
Do you peek out sometimes? Do you shin up and peek over the fence or
yeah, have a little look, climb
what do you,
up the
what do you see
little, I just think grass isn't greener.
Is there actual grass outside the walled garden?
Yeah but I don't think it's greener.
Okay,
I mean, no, I'm just kidding. I mean, I have played with other phones. It's just that I just like everything to work together. I'm in the jail. I'm in the Apple jail. They bought me, and I don't really.
You bought them.
You know, yeah, I don't really like. In a way, I don't like being sort of captured. I would like to not be captured. I would like to be more free. But it's easy and. I like easy.
The thing is, I think people will relate
like
to what you're getting at.
No,
you,
exactly.
But you do get captured because you can't move your... I mean, look, I'll tell you something, right? I got the old phone this weekend and put it next to my new one. And I went through this whole thing about it'll automatically just transfer everything. I thought, well, this will take about 2 hours, but it's going to be worth it, yeah? I got 20 minutes in and it went, can't do it.
Can't do it. You see, that's what can't be asked with that.
I know. And I tell you what, I think it was. The phone that I got has got a smaller memory than the other phone because I'm going to go for cloud storage instead and I couldn't be bothered to pay all the money for the big, you know, hard drive side.
That's a good point.
So I think that's what it was. But my point is I've been trying to manually put stuff across and it's such a pain, right? It's such a pain. It wouldn't be any different, I'm guessing, on a Android phone. In fact, I don't know what, I'm just moaning. I'm just moaning for the sake of it.
I've got some facts that you might not know about.
Let's do the facts.
Right, here are some facts that you might not know. The first Android phone wasn't the Google Pixel or the Samsung Galaxy. It was the HTC Dream, which was the T-Mobile G1 back in 2008.
I remember because John Bentley was invited to the launch and I think he reviewed it for us.
I think he was one of the first journalists to get his hands on it, actually. Yeah, you're right. Now, here's something, and it's a theme that's following us through this podcast. So Apple nearly scrapped the iPhone. Before launch, Steve Jobs considered abandoning the project in favour of a touchscreen iPod. And remember that he wasn't going to do the iPod because he thought MP3s had finished.
That's right.
This is amazing, if you think about it.
The accidental nature of innovation. Interesting.
Right, Just complete game changers. And it was Steve Jobs just, oh, shall we or not? Shall we? Yes, no, yes, no. Amazing. Android was originally made for digital cameras. So Google bought Android in 2005, but it was meant to power cameras, not smartphones. I didn't know that, did you?
No, I did not know that.
Here's something else. iPhones are built using Samsung parts. So there's this rivalry, obviously, but despite that, Apple relies on Samsung for iPhone displays and memory chips.
That's fascinating.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I know there's a real push with a lot of the bigger brands now to bring as much of their silicon in-house.
Yeah.
They've definitely been moving that way, haven't they, with recent innovations. But yeah, they all share the same resources, don't they?
Well, the resources, you know, sometimes scarce, so they have to talk to each other, which is another podcast, really. But Android has more features, but Apple users upgrade more often. So the average iPhone user keeps their phone for 3 years, while Android users hold on to theirs for 4+ years. I don't think that's a surprise, really.
Wow,
me.
I'm fascinated to hear
that. Yeah. Apple makes more profit despite selling fewer phones. iPhones make up 85% of total smartphone profits, even though Android sells more devices. That's sort of general Android across the globe.
Well, I tell you what, I ain't calling a winner on this. I'm just not going to do it. Not only because people will throw things at me in the street.
That's fun.
And I've been tempted into taking sides before on the Gadget Show, and it never ends well. I remember.
Go on.
I remember saying, it was on the script, saying the PC, the gaming PC is dead. My God. I should have thought that one through. So I'm not calling this. What about you?
Well, I tell you what, I'll call one side, you call the other. How about that?
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. Well, as I live in the walled garden,
yes,
I will call that iPhone wins.
Right.
For tighter integration. So Apple controls hardware and software, leading to smoother performance, which is obviously one of the reasons why I'm still here.
Yeah.
Faster updates. iPhones get 5 years plus of iOS updates, while most Android phones get 3 years max. Brand loyalty, really strong. iPhone users rarely switch to Android unless the name's Jason Bradbury, while many Android users eventually switch to iPhone, I'm reliably informed. A better resale value. iPhones retain their value longer than Android iPhones. The obsession is real. App Store generates more revenue. Developers prioritize iOS, meaning some apps launch on the iPhone first. But I still want a foldable phone.
I was going to start with that. I was going to channel Matt 9640, who started this podcast with their comment. Thank you, Matt. And say that the innovation in this area resides with Android phones. And that extends to all kinds of hardware variety, you know, like having a stylus or a 200 megapixel camera or some of the cameras that we referenced at the Mobile World Congress. With the clip-on lenses.
Yep,
the Leica lenses. Forget the phone it was. It's in a previous episode if you want to listen to it. You also, on the other end of the scale, we've covered Nothing, haven't we? The Nothing phone. You get more affordable options. My God, those phones are incredible. And I very, very nearly bought one.
So
iPhones start at £700 plus, but Android offers solid phones at, you know, £200 or thereabouts. And the innovation within the Android world is quicker. Features like 5G and high refresh rate displays, which is so important for gamers. And I seem to remember under display fingerprint scanners all arrived on Android first. So that's my case.
Yeah. So who's winning this then? I'm on the ladder again, looking over the walled garden after your little description there. iPhone wins, I suppose, in profit and brand loyalty, but Android dominates in market share and more importantly, innovation, which is kind of what your story there was kind of dominated by. So does the real winner have the most users or the most money? What do you think? Let us know.
Yeah, look forward to hearing you on that one. Right. I don't have a prop, I'm afraid, for this. I'm sorry to let you down.
You have yourself. You're prop
but
enough.
But we're sort of related to the previous one, so we'll maybe kind of condense this a little bit. But it's Mac versus PC, the ultimate computing battle royale. It's the 1980s. IBM's personal computer is taking over offices worldwide, while Apple's Macintosh is bringing a sleek graphical interface to home users. For over four decades, the battle has raged. Mac versus PC, Apple versus Microsoft, design versus customization. Is that fair? But in a world where most computers are PCs and Apple is the most valuable company on the planet, who's really winning? Right, Susie, do you have the numbers?
So I've got some scores on the doors for you, right, talking of the 1980s. Total computers sold, this is as of last year, okay? So Macs, 200 million units. Yeah. PCs, window-based, over 1.6 billion active devices. Massive difference there. Global market share, Windows, PCs, 73%.
Yeah.
Mac, 18%. And Linux and Chrome OS, the rest, basically.
Okay.
Mac versus PC average price. So your Mac starts at just shy of £1,000 for a MacBook Air, and a PC could be as low as £300 for a decent laptop. Windows, over 90% of PC games run natively on Windows. Right. Mac, obviously limited selection, really, mostly indie and casual games.
Yeah.
There's my numbers.
I like it. I mean, no surprises there.
I've got a surprise, though. I've got a little surprise fact for you.
Go on,
that people might not know. Microsoft actually saved Apple from bankruptcy. Did you know that?
So tell me more.
In 1997, pre-gadget show, Apple was really struggling, and Microsoft invested $150 million in Apple to keep it afloat. I think that's great. It's a great fact. The first Mac had no arrow keys.
Okay.
So Steve Jobs wanted to rely solely on the mouse, which kind of didn't work out because people hated it. Most businesses use Windows, but most creative professionals use Macs. That hasn't really changed. So video editors, designers and musicians often prefer Macs, while offices and engineers lean more towards your PCs. You can run Windows on a Mac, but you can't easily run Mac OS on a PC. So Apple locks its software down with its own hardware.
Yeah.
No surprise there. Macs last longer, but repairs are expensive. So Macs often outlast PCs due to tighter integration, but fixing one will cost you a lot more.
As a PC tinkerer, I have, you know, God knows how many PCs I've built over the years. And the reason that I'm a PC advocate is because I like to buy my own hardware. I like to put in water cooling or a new graphics card or, you know, mess around with hard drives. And I love video editing. And of course, I love games. I couldn't really, you know, I understand the gaming experience is much more diverse on the Mac platform than it used to be. But it's still, you know, you can't hold it up to a well-specced gaming PC. There's no competition. The gaming PC wins every time. The kind of, you know, unmetered access to every game you could possibly imagine, every peripheral you could possibly plug into it, you know. So in that respect, you know, my loyalty on this one, I'm going to just put it out up front, is most certainly in the PC camp.
Okay, I could say why Mac could be the winner in a way here. So better security, so they are less vulnerable to viruses. You've got the seamless Apple ecosystem, so obviously it works, you know, with all your devices. Longer software support, Macs get OS updates for 6 to 7 years, while PCs a little bit shorter than that. You've got sleek design, if we could talk about that, premium build, and M series chips outperform most Intel CPUs. Apple's own silicon is more power efficient, really.
And you get things like, you get the main machine and an Apple designed monitor, or you get them in one unit, you know. And obviously that's not often the case with PCs. You're getting the screen from one manufacturer, the graphics card from a second, the rest of the PC from another five or six manufacturers, you know. They might be badged up, but they're all brought together. And I think in that sense, Apple can win because the integration is so elegant, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I forget who it was in our chat earlier, the comments that we started the show with, but I'm sure they were mentioning screens. Was it Matt again? I would say that there has been innovation in Apple's screens, but they've been in terms of things like Retina display and just the pure quality, very, very beautiful all round, incredible industrial design, market leading design, I would say, right? But for me, why the PC wins, I've already stated it's gaming acumen, but also because they're more affordable. You can get a decent PC for a fraction of the cost of a Mac. And if you build your own, you can save even more money. So that, you know, harks to the customization. And there's more software compatibility. Most business and engineering software runs, I'm not going to say better, but it runs on Windows. Yeah. And so those are my arguments, and I'm keeping to them.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Absolutely. All of them very, very fair. So who's winning this one then? I guess we could say Mac wins in terms of design, perhaps longevity and integration, but PCs dominate in affordability, gaming and business use and customization, don't they? So does the real winner have the most users or the most loyal fans? What do you think? Let us know.
It's one for the ages. Susie, tell me you need another little visual prompt.
Go on. Have you got a visual prompt? He leans over, blows on his
Nintendo
64. It's so dark, I can't see.
My N64 with perfect dark, no less. Perfect dark, which requires the expansion pack, which I've put in there in order to play the campaign. Just a little fact there for any retro gamers that are listening or watching. But I've just got to say... that none of this was rehearsed. Literally everything I've held up today just happened to be in the studio. How cool is that?
I'd like to say that none of this is rehearsed ever, any of it.
So go on, Susie, lead us in.
So finally, it's Nintendo versus Sega, the 90s console war. Right, so it was the battle, obviously, that defined a generation. Nintendo versus Sega. It's the late 80s,
oh,
90s.
I love it. What's my hair like?
Oh, your hair's like mass, like a bit Lamal from Kajagoogoo, isn't it?
Kajagoogoo. What's your hair like?
A bit permy. It's quite long.
Very, very permy.
Bit Gloria Estefan. Okay.
Are we mousse or are we gel?
Oh, no, I had a bit of gel in there. But there was only two types of gel you could buy back in those days.
I swear that the reason I lost my hair was because of the mousse. I don't know what the hell it was made of.
It's nothing to do with the mousse. It's to do with the genes in your mum's family. But let's move on.
All right. Ruining my joke. Sorry, carry on. I'm being really annoying. Carry on.
So it's the late 80s and 90s. Playgrounds, living rooms, and even TV ads became battlegrounds for one of gaming's most legendary rivalries. It was Mario versus Sonic, Super Nintendo versus Mega Drive, family-friendly fun versus edgy, in-your-face cool. But who really won the 90s console war? Let's find out.
Stroke 80s. Wow. So the numbers on this one, they're going to really test you. The Carol Vorderman of tech, Susie Perry, let's do it.
Okay, here we go. So console sales, these are global stats. Nintendo Entertainment System.
Right.
61.9 million.
Wow.
Sega Master System.
Wow.
20 million.
Yeah.
Super Nintendo, 49.1 million. And finally, Sega Mega Drive, or Genesis as it was known in the States, 30.7 million units sold.
Wow. Wow. What about the games? Have you got any stats on those?
Yeah, so per console. So Super Mario Brothers, 40.2 million.
God.
Alex Kidd in Miracle World, 3 million. Super Mario World, 26.6 million.
Yeah.
And Sonic the Hedgehog, 15 million.
That's amazing to me. I really didn't know that there was such a big contrast between the obvious numbers sold on the Nintendo platforms. Anyway, carry on.
Yeah, so obviously Super Mario there being the highest. In terms of company profits in the 90s, this is.
Oh, yeah.
Nintendo, so this is Nintendo 1992. I found out the $1.2 billion profit.
Wow.
As opposed to Sega in 1993, $326 million profit. Big difference, that.
Yeah, massive, yeah.
Massive, massive. In terms of advertising spend, Sega over $100 million per year. In very, very aggressive, actually. Cooler than Nintendo campaigns. So quite pushy and quite sort of almost American politics in the way that they commanded their advertising. Nintendo...
You're saying that my Mega Drive is Donald Trump?
I am. Yeah, okay, that's what I'm saying. Nintendo, less edgy, but still spent millions on TV and magazine ads, but a little bit nicer. They're a bit sweeter.
No, I've not got much to add to this.
Oh.
I'm just kidding. Oh, my God. Where do we start? So I've got every console you mentioned. I've got them. I've got all the ones slightly before, all the ones after. And I have so much love for this period because, you know, unlike, well, I suppose similar in certain respects to the big rivalries that we've covered thus far on this fabulous episode. I'm really enjoying it. And I hope you are, listeners and viewers. But this was the start of a brand new thing, like a something out of science fiction. The idea that you could take the already exotic experience that you'd had in your arcade, or if you lived in Lincolnshire like I did, down the local pub or social club where you found arcade machines, and bring it into your home was incredible. It was liberating. An entire new world was opened up to you, and it was at the hands of these incredible innovators. I have so much love for both Nintendo and Sega, and I do agree with your rather interesting kind of characterization. Yeah, that Nintendo was less edgy, and Sega was slightly cooler. And that went into the games that you chose for them. It was, you know, that kind of military sims and kind of what's the game I've got down here for the Mega Drive? Here we go. Again, not prepared. Jungle Strike for the Mega Drive. And then a kind of softer core, family-friendly multiplayer sweeter experience, yeah, for the Nintendo console. Interesting. It doesn't mean that you didn't have those same edgy titles. Perfect Dark, that I started with when I showed you the N64, is great. It's an absolute genre-defining first-person shooter. But I think your characterization is good. And you're right. I now remember the adverts for both platforms did kind of push that narrative
massively. So you might not know that Sega nearly partnered with Nintendo. So before launching the Mega Drive, Sega considered working with Nintendo, but they decided to go head to head instead. It's these like flippy moments that we've been talking about today do blow your mind a little bit, don't they? Because it would have completely changed the landscape
if certain decisions that had maybe even been made had been rolled back or hadn't been made in the first place. It's amazing. You think it's all so planned out, but clearly it's not. Like, it takes will, a force of will and commitment, doesn't it, from someone brave enough to give it a try.
Sliding doors moments. It feels a bit like politics all over again, doesn't it? I keep comparing it, but...
Yeah, because the world's so crazy
generally,
right now.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. So Genesis does what Nintendo don't. Do you remember that?
Nintendo don't. I loved it. It was brilliant, yeah.
So this is the Sega's famous ad slogan, kind of mocking Nintendo's slower family-friendly image, really, which is a bit mean. So Sonic was created specifically to fight Mario.
He was, yeah.
Yeah, Sega needed a mascot to rival Nintendo's plumber. Sonic was designed to be fast, cool and rebellious. That says quite a lot. But Nintendo, I mean, I keep saying they're sweet, but they did also play dirty. So they pressured retailers not to stock Sega consoles or they'd lose access to popular Nintendo games. It's mad. It's war, isn't it? It's absolutely crazy.
It's incredible, yeah.
And Sega made a console before the Mega Drive, the Sega SG-1000. Yeah. That was released in 1983, but it flopped, leading to the more successful Master System. That's how that came about. The Mega Drive was technically superior to the SNES in some ways. It had a faster processor, which made Sonic feel much more fluid, but the SNES had better graphics and sound. This is why it's such a good battle, I think.
Oh, it's great. It's great. Yeah, brilliant.
Sega, they beat Nintendo to online gaming. The Sega MegaNet service in 1990 let players compete online years before Nintendo.
But there was so much to this story. We could do an entire episode on it. There were things like the, I forget what it was called, but there was an American gaming series that were like a road show that went around America. And it was a Nintendo competition sponsored by Nintendo. There was all kinds of really interesting ways that they were vying to try and keep ahead of each other. I think as well, there was a bit of brand loyalty, certainly in Asia for Nintendo. Because they started out as a card company in like the late 19th century, actually, making card games. I'm sure that's it, but you can always fact check me. And also, let's be honest, culturally, you know this because you worked there as a model, didn't you? Japan has a certain aesthetic preoccupation with cute things, right? Yeah. And that's why Nintendo games look like they do. Sega didn't roll with that. They came in, they took the battle to them with Sonic. And I have so many great memories of playing Sonic the Hedgehog and, you know, looking for those rings and shooting along. It's a great invention. But for me, it was more about the kind of hardcore titles, you know, titles that weren't necessarily kind of cutesy, squeezy platformers, but military simulators or first person shooters or beat 'em up games, you know. And in that respect, the Mega Drive with its cool kind of almost sort of Star Wars aesthetic, it looks like a kind of something that looks like Darth Vader, doesn't it? The Mega Drive, the Genesis. And for me, that's where, certainly if I was going to side with these, and we've been doing that with all of our other rivalries on this episode, I'm going to place my cap in the Sega camp.
Yeah, I think I'd fall Nintendo. And, you know, you were talking about them in Japan and they would be described as kawaii, I think, which means sort of cute.
Konnichiwa.
Yeah. okay, sorry. Thank you. Is that all your Japanese?
I've no idea what I just said, yeah.
But, you know, who's the verdict for you? That's what's important. So, you know, in the 90s, it was a fierce fight between the two, but Nintendo had the edge, really. So by the early 2000s, Sega had left the console market, making Nintendo the ultimate victor. But what do you think? Was it better to be the underdog with attitude, like Jason, or the industry giant that played the long game?
Sewer Shark. Oh,
what do you think? But I mean, it's all great, isn't it?
All brilliant. They're great. Brilliant. And now we can own them all.
We love it all.
We can own them all because they're relatively inexpensive. You just got to go and nick a TV off the street.
But ultimately, we want to know what you think. So let us know your thoughts on any of these scraps that we've been having today on the Gadget Show podcast.
So there we go. That's a wrap for our Tech Rivalries episode. What do you think? Did we resolve any debates or maybe start some new ones?
But that's what makes tech so exciting. There's always something to argue about. If you've enjoyed these episodes, don't forget to subscribe because we've got even more topics coming up.
See you next time.